Chapter 10. It's been a long day. Poppy and her gang have found one of the last remaining waterbed motels in the country, the Free Flow Motel, which boasted in the ads H2O mattresses that generate significant wave action. It wasn't that far away, either, only about 15 miles west of Newark on the nondescript Highway 1 in Arsenal, New Jersey. They probably could have made it all the way to New York City, but it would have been late, and they need Marcia's mother, Adora, to be wide awake if she's going to join them in the final attack on her daughter's lying, conniving, thieving way of life. Poppy's grandmother may think that the restraining order she has out against Marcia will protect her, but Marcia obeys no judge's orders, local or federal. Daryl, who seems to have been driven completely out of his mind from sexual frustration, keeps ranting about some kind of carnal deal he has with Poppy's mother. But anybody who has detailed conversations with his own penis can only be used, never trusted. Still, she owes Daryl. And Richard, too, she supposes. They saved her and the bouncers' lives, and now they've reached a truce. Poppy and her family of tramps can kill Marcia after they get their money back, but Daryl and Richard get to fuck her first. Just not in front of the grandmother. There were so many ambulances arriving from different towns at the St. Francis Medical Center emergency room in Trenton, New Jersey, that bedlam would be the only word you could use to describe it. Marcia had grabbed a soiled lab coat off a loading dock as soon as she fled the ambulance out front, and even the shouts from the attendants were drowned out by the press clamoring for blood and gore details from the arriving crash victims. Marcia knew to keep moving and never look back. Up in the elevator she goes, and bang, right into the emergency examination cubicle that has been set up to handle the overflow of patients. What little privacy these flimsy curtains offered is good enough for Marcia's hit-and-run thievery. She immediately begins rifling through a semi-conscious survivor's purse. Hey, it's that lady who had the cat on the bus! When the dazed and confused victim spots her missing wig on Marcia's head, she clutches her bag tighter to her chest in fear. How dare she resist? Marcia grabs a fresh hypodermic needle, still in its package, off the mini supply shelf, unwraps it, and eeny, meeny, miny, mo, picks at random a vial full of medicine, who knows what kind, fills it up, shoves the needle into the stubborn accident victim's arm, and injects it. Whatever was in there works. Oh, the lady is still alive, but her eyes pop open wide. She gives up her purse quickly, and Marcia helps herself to whatever cash is inside. She then removes her wig, which had miraculously stayed on all through the ambulance ride, and plops it down on the rightful owner's noggin. When Marcia yanks it down hard, it seems to fit the woman just fine. Pretty pretty? Trenton makes, Marcia takes. The Free Flow Motel wasn't exaggerating in their advertising. The place is a horizontal hideaway of secret repose, a sloshing paradise island for bouncers to refresh their powers of vertical escalation. If you can't be in the air, at least you can go up and down on the water mattresses, and believe me, there's all kind of novelty ones here. Bunk water beds, circular ones for adult experimentation, even little water cots for pets. The bouncers are crammed into the Esther Williams suite, a large, reasonably priced two-bedroom showcase filled with custom-designed aqua mattresses of every shape. Even the kitchen has one. Poppy has set up a whole rippling buffet of bouncing treats, small apples, cherry tomatoes, grapes, any food that can spring up once it is thrown down. Hungry trampoliners pick up the circular hors d'oeuvres, jumping from waterbed to waterbed like they're playing a game of human jacks, and gobble them down hungrily. Once their stomachs are filled, it's party time! Volta puts on a big Frida CD and the whole gang starts twerking to the New Orleans bounce sound while riding the ripples of the many pads of wave bedding. Campolina, ever the film buff, lets out a scream of glee after turning on the television and seeing the movie Bounce is available on pay TV. Sure, it's a lousy romantic comedy, and they've all seen it a million times, but just the title alone makes them feel less anxious. Besides, it stars Gwyneth Paltrow, who has been known to be sympathetic to the Bounce movement, yet so far has ignored their pleas for financial help. But they can hope, can't they? Past the empty nurse's station, Marcia flies into another patient's room. The middle-aged Mexican lady with long gray roots in her henna-dyed hair is fully conscious but seems to have some sort of internal injuries. Marcia doesn't recognize her. She must have been sitting farther back on the bus. Figuring this injured traveler is now immobile, Marcia starts rummaging through the pockets of her coat hanging on the back of the door. "Hey, you," the woman manages to sputter out, shocked at the bold-faced robbery attempt. "That's my coat." Marcia pretends not to hear her as she empties the pockets, leaving the pesos and grabbing the few dollars inside. When the bruised woman attempts to get out of bed to stop Marcia, she forgets she is hooked up to the IV and trips over the connecting tubes, landing hard, maybe even breaking the arm she tried to cushion her fall with. Well, that's what you get. Coast clear, right into another hospital suite Marcia goes. This time, it's an Amish family gathered around the mother, whose bonneted head is bandaged and face badly cut. God, it's like that old film Around the World in 80 Days that Campolina was always raving about. Marcia's marks are so diverse, coming from every damn culture in the world. "Did you hear?" Marcia asks with breathless sincerity as she grabs a surgical mask from a shelf and puts it on. "What?" the whole family yells in alarm. Marcia's voice is now muffled through the gauze, but they still hear her warn. "Legionnaire's disease has broken out in the hospital." The family stampedes out of the room in panic. Now it's easy pickings. Serial lying is almost a transcendental high, Marcia realizes, as she empties the frightened lady's change purse. Marcia hopes to never come down from this magical bliss. Daryl sits in the corner of the motel suite, the only one in an actual chair, nursing Richard and feeding him through the hole in his dick fish food he swiped from under the lobby's tropical aquarium. Ironically, Richard, who always craved deep throat from Marcia, doesn't have one himself and can barely get down these much-needed vitamins without gagging. He's trying to participate in his fellow traveler's bouncing elation. But to be honest, watching them all cascading from waterbed to waterbed makes him feel seasick. Daryl suddenly spots a magic fingers device on a shelf that must have been left over from the old days of regular motel beds. It's still attached to the little motor and seems like it's just begging to be used again. Daryl sloshes over on the undulating mattresses while Richard shouts out something about having the whirlies. But Daryl ignores his cries of distress, knowing the tingling relaxation this little contraption promises might just be the alternative medication they both need. Luckily, he has a quarter, and that's all it takes to turn on this vibrating little mova. "If you can attach it to a bed, why not your waist?" Daryl surmises, like the genius he knows he is. He takes the four nylon ties that are plugged into the side, attaches these to some batteries from a flashlight he finds in the closet, and tapes the whole makeshift power pack onto his belt. Before he can insert the coin, Richard projectile vomits out of his hole some sort of penile urinary tract infection that just misses Twisted Billy, who doesn't even notice because he's trying to turn himself into the human slipknot he once learned in Boy Scouts, but is having trouble getting traction on the lapping water mattress. Poppy and the bouncers are all running out of steam. When the last cut of Big Frida's album is finished, so are they. Settling in for a cozy night of slosh sleeping that keeps their active constitution from shutting down completely, the trampoline fanatics create a human rug of movement and fall asleep, bobbing up and down. Daryl pops in the quarter, and presto, magic fingers works. His whole body starts shaking and shuddering, spreading complete relaxation even down inside his pants. Richard seems suddenly relieved, but at first is not sure if it's because he finally vomited or just that all that elevated vibrating gives him flashbacks to adolescent masturbation. Either way, his entire penile self feels at peace. Richard falls asleep, and as soon as Daryl hears him snoring softly below, he cranks up the power level and dozes off himself in quivering pleasure, finally understanding the rewards of constant motion. Nighty-night. Marcia sees security guards are now patrolling the hospital corridors, but just as she begins to get paranoid, a whole new gang of medics comes flying out of the freight elevator with some patients on stretchers rescued from a new nighttime turnpike pileup. As they pass, Marcia steps into a nursing station and grabs a cell phone left behind on a desk. And what do you know? There are some crackers left on the counter, too. Carr's English water ones, not too shabby. A little bland for Marcia's sophisticated palate, but God knows, a step above those common saltines she had to choke down earlier in the day. All this thievery can give a girl an appetite. She ducks into a much larger examination room and sees a male patient, blue in the face, who appears to be having some sort of stroke. There's not a doctor or nurse in sight. Oh my God, it's that crazy bus driver. He's probably been so awful to the medical staff, they just said fuck him and moved on to more grateful patients. Marcia feels a certain kinship with this disagreeable man. Imagine how she would act if she had to get a real job. She understands his policy of the customer always being wrong and mentally salutes his distrust of the general public. She's not sure, but he seems to recognize her, too. He starts gasping and shaking in rage, and she moves closer, feeling a warped tenderness for their curious bonding over their shared hatred of mankind. His eyes light up in anger at his own physical failings and the imperfections of the human body. But what can you do mid-stroke? Marcia leans down over his bed and pinches his nostrils shut, and then dives her lying mouth down to his for sealed resuscitation. 15 times she compresses his chest, and with every pound he sputters, chokes, and gurgles his way back to life. Of course he doesn't thank her, and Marcia understands she wouldn't have either. Duty is its own reward. Instead, he farts, but Marcia doesn't take it personally. Matter of fact, she can feel a small slug of feces being formed inside her own rectum right this moment. He won't be mad if she uses his private bathroom. It will only take her a few seconds to fire it out. No, not a few. 2. Then she can catch up on her beauty sleep right outside in the waiting room. Nobody will notice her there. She can hide in plain sight. Maybe even have time to snag another wallet.